For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Okay, we are officially on the top of page 126. We're on the top line. So you can get your place. I'll give you the quick background just to get us back into place. We are talking about the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh, the mitzvah of declaring the new moon. What Rav Hirsch had done that we did last week was describe how, even though it might seem like this is a mitzvah or a concept of aligning ourselves with the actual astrological phenomenon, that it's our job to get it right, to make sure when the new moon actually appears and to declare Rosh Chodesh accordingly. He went through at length proving that that's actually not the purpose. It's not about getting it right. Indeed, the sages were given full authority to get it wrong. Whether they got it wrong on purpose or accidentally or inadvertently, what they declare goes. That is the actual day, even though it's not actually, quote-unquote, correct. And what he did last week, what we saw was explain that's because of the concept of moed. Moed, which is a meeting place. A meeting place can be both in time or in space. And that Rosh Chodesh is a meeting place in which it's a declaration of a time between Hashem and the Jewish people, not to be one in which the boss says, you'll meet me in my office at 3 o'clock tomorrow. It's not that way. In which he says, I need to speak to you. We could do it tomorrow or Wednesday. Tell me what time is good for you. In which, here's the parameters of when the meeting is going to be. You tell me when it works, because we both have to be partners in this meeting, and that creates a totally different type of relationship. I'm still the boss, but I need you to be involved and invested in how this is going to go. We're going to have a meeting place because it's going to be a development of the relationship. When is it good for you? I'm not going to impose it upon you. Sometimes things are, of course, in Torah Judaism, but this is not. This is a combined effort. And the reason for that, said Rav Hirsch in his beautiful poetic language, was it was a, as we veer off over the course of the month from our spiritual light, we get darker and darker and darker and darker. What Rosh Chodesh allows for us is to clear that up, to recalibrate ourselves. You have to come forward to the meeting and to say, I need to see where am I spiritually, and where do I want to be? And every once in a while, that once a month, we take the opportunity to sort of dust ourselves off and say, you know, I veered. I'm not exactly where I need to be, and I need to come close again and reestablish that which it is that I wanted to. All that we saw last week. So far, so good? One thought just to conclude that as we just went through this big rainstorm, which was a blessing because it washes away all of the pollen. So two thoughts. Number one, if you notice when you walked into the building today, just for example, so under the overhang, as you walk in, it's still a pollen mess. The floor is still green. So it's an interesting thing. So pollen, which is, in our example, the enemy, so to speak, even though there's obviously a reason for it in the world and it does good things, but as far as our being able to breathe is a little bit of a problem, it's insidious. It just gets everywhere. It's in the air. The rain, which washes it away, if you're covered, won't get to it. So the rain, you have to be exposed to the rain to be cleansed. Even though to be dirtied, you don't have to be exposed to it directly. Just being outside will expose you to it. But if you want to be cleansed, you have to make sure you're actually out there in the open. And that's really, it's a beautiful lesson in terms of what we're talking about. The elements of darkness in the world, the elements that pull us away from what it is that we want to become and who we want to be, they're out there. You will be impacted by it no matter what you do. If you want to be cleansed, you gotta go out. You gotta make the active effort to actually allow that to happen, because it's easier to get dirty than it is to get clean. That's just the reality. Which was the second point that I'll mention, which is brought home this morning when I went out to the car after, I don't know, maybe like 10 o'clock or 10:30, and already that clear, distinct greenish hue had made its way back to the car. Like, I can't believe, after all that rain, we didn't want, nope, it comes back. And that's the reality with all things like dust. We spoke about this many times. It's a constant. If you sit for too long, you will gather dust or pollen or whatever. You have to wipe it away. Rosh Chodesh says refersh is that wiping away process. It's the process of every month. If I just let it go every month, then I'm going to become totally covered in black. How do I let the light shine through? There's this process of recalibrating myself and wiping away and washing away, and that is the representative of, I see the light again. The new moon has appeared, and it's indicative or representative of my own life of finding that light again and recalibrating myself to it. So far, so good? Okay. All that we said last week, right? Says it first. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to take this, and he's going to explain the concept of Yontif Sheni. I left you with this last week, the two-day Yontif. The two-day Yontif is a concept which exists, which much to the chagrin of those of us living in the exile, like, why do we still need to have a two-day Yontif? Don't we know the calendar? The answer is yes, we do know the calendar. Why was there a two-day Yontif? Let's just go over this for a second anyway, being that Yontif is coming. Why is there such a thing as a two-day Yontif outside the land of Israel? So there's a very simple reason. And that is, Rosh Chodesh was established, as we've mentioned, by two witnesses who saw the new moon, who had come forth to Yerushalayim, and who would testify in front of the high court that they indeed saw the new moon. The high court would declare it to be Rosh Chodesh, and voila, it is Rosh Chodesh. As we've mentioned, there is always a two-day possibility which can be Rosh Chodesh. It could either be the 30th day of the month, or what would be called the 31st day of the month. Either one of those might be the first of the next month, meaning that the previous month would either be 29 days or 30 days. So every month, there was a two-day possibility in which it could be, and you didn't know, because it was based on the witnesses coming forward and the Beis Din making the decision. So when Beis Din would make the decision, they would then send out messengers throughout the land to let everybody know, indeed, which day it was. Well, in a day without emails and cell phones and texting and telephones and all the like, you were limited by the ability of a horseman to travel the length and breadth of the country to get the word across. They had tried other methods, but it was messed up. It wasn't foolproof other than officially sending out word. So what would happen is, if you picture Yerushalayim in the middle of the country over here, so they would spread out right after the new day was declared, and all the areas would know. Well, there was a certain radius which was beyond 2 weeks' time. They just couldn't get there within those 2 weeks. So the holidays, Pesach and Sukkot, are all on the 15th of the month. So if a messenger had not yet gotten all the areas that are close to Jerusalem within the 15-day journey, they would know which day is Pesach, and they would know which day is Sukkot, because the messengers got them and told them which day had been Rosh Chodesh, and since they knew which day had been Rosh Chodesh, they knew which day was correctly the first night of Pesach. But if you lived beyond that 15-day radius, so when Pesach started, you still weren't really sure, is tonight the first night of Pesach? Is tomorrow night the first night of Pesach? And there was no way to find that information out. So what did you do? You kept 2 days, because I don't know which day is Pesach. And then eventually the messengers would get there, and then you would recalibrate your calendar based on what was done as soon as you found out. At a certain point in time, the Gemara itself already says, we became familiar with the calendar. We know exactly when the right day is. The language the Gemara uses is Bekia Diyarcha. We are experts in the cycle of the moon and the sun. We know. So the Gemara says, so maybe now even the places that are 15 days away, I skipped this. Let me go back one step. The Gemara says, when the basin was about to be abolished, meaning the destruction was on in the imminent future, and there wasn't going to be a high court anymore, so Beis Din had a problem. Since Rosh Chodesh is established based on the high court, if there is no high court, you can't establish Rosh Chodesh. If you can't establish Rosh Chodesh, you can't establish the holidays, and the whole Jewish world would fall apart. So Hillel HaZaken, Hillel the Elder, established while the high court was still in session that they sanctified all the new months from here until the time of Mashiach. The calendar is now completely set. With all of the Rosh Chodesh declared with the authority of the Beis Din while it still stood, and the calendar as we have it today is a predetermined set calendar. You can look it up, for the next 50 years, 100 years, 500 years, when will Rosh Chodesh be, when will the holidays be, it's all set even though we don't have the actual court anymore. So the Gemara raises the question, well, if that was done, and we know the new month, and we know the whole calendar, then everybody should only celebrate 1 day of Pesach, and 1 day of Sukkot, and 1 day of Shavuos, because it's set, it's been determined, it's been declared already. We don't need this. We're experts. We have everything we need. Good question. Gemara answers, when they established the calendar, they maintained that any community which lived beyond that original 15-day journey should keep the custom of the two-day yontif. Because maybe one time the system will fall apart again and we won't know everything that we need to know, and the non-Jews who we live amongst will cause problems, and the system will always keep on to the two-day custom. That's what we do today. And it has been raised all the time, why do we still do this? Why do we need to? We know already, since we know it's the real witch, why do we still do this? Ezra Fersh, you're going to see today, Mirtz Hashem, one of the most brilliant presentations. Really, just brilliant. Fersh says, I just explained to you what Rosh Chodesh is about. Rosh Chodesh is about a moed. It's about a convocation. It's about a meeting place between the Jewish people and Hashem. It's about us, the Jewish people, being active participants and figuring out when the meeting should be, because we have to be active participants in saying, you see the moon? It's not about getting it right. It's not about a system that's based on astrology. It's a system of we need to be on the lookout to see that first ray of light. We have to be watching to say to ourselves, this is about something deeper. It's about the Jew who's becoming covered with dust and schmutz and pollen, washing himself off once a month, recalibrating himself to the person he wants to be, who he can be. Says Rav Hirsch, but what happens when we can't do that anymore? What happens when the system was taken away from us because of exile, and we don't have witnesses looking out? We don't have the Jewish people as a collective whole on the 29th day of the month, everybody searching the sky, maybe they'll be the ones to see that ray of light. Now what happens? Says Rav Hirsch, the institution of the two-day yontif is going to be what saves us and maintains the system as it always meant to be. Let's read it inside, it's brilliant. Hence, on the top line of page 126, hence also the special essential meaning of Yontif Sheni, the two-day Yontif, just for times which are, unfortunately, Baki Bikviya Diyarcha, times in which we are experts in the new moon. Now, he put in that word there right away. It's unfortunate. You think it's good that we know astrology? You think it's good that we know the new moon? That's what we're fighting. This is not about getting it right. It's about a relationship between the Jewish people and Hashem. And so we live, unfortunately, in a time, says the version, where all we have is our expertise in the workings of the moon. For only the most narrow-minded ignorance can find in it a matter for jubilation that we are baki bikviya diarcha. To find that we are experts, a matter of joy or jubilance, you have to be narrow-minded and ignorant to think that. That we have no longer any doubt as to the exact date of each Rosh Chodesh. People who think, now we know, there's no doubt. How great is that? You don't understand anything, says Rav Hirsch. This certainty of ours is solely due to the sad fact that in our Golots, we have no national representatives authorized by smicha. We have no leaders of the high court who have the authority, al pi re'iya, based on a human being's testifying to them, who are empowered to fix the Rosh Chodesh by their consecration on our behalf. We don't have anyone to do that. We don't have anyone great enough who has smicha, who has been rabbinic ordination, not the kind that I have, the kind that went straight from somebody who got it 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 from somebody who had smicha, the real deal. We don't have anybody like that to represent us anymore. But through this, our new moon festivals and our mo'adim would lack that essential character which makes them into our new moons. Our mo'adim, now that they're not ours anymore. What made them Rosh Chodesh Hu Lachem? What made it to us? What made it ours? We were active participants in doing this. Now we're not anymore. We would have totally lost that essential component had not the wise foresight of our last national representation in the person of Hillel the Younger fixed the beginnings of all the months for the whole period of our dispersion until our future restoration. He established the calendar as we know it. All the months for the whole period of our dispersion until the redemption, by the adventitious aid of intercalation of the occasional day in a month and a month in a year. And how did he do that? Because he added what we know. This year we had 2 months of Adar. We have an extra day here, an extra day there in the calendar. He worked the whole thing out. Is that good? Good news for the Jews, bad news for the Jews. Says the first, this is terrible.
that was done out of necessity. That if he had he not done that, we wouldn't have any. We would have fallen apart. But is it a good thing that we have a set, fixed calendar? Oh, it's terrible. There's not a Jew around who searches the sky come the 29th day of the month looking for the new moon, looking for the ray of light to reflect itself where it had once been dark and now light again shines. Not a single Jew in the world looks in the sky to say, I need to do that. I need to be dusting myself off to allow that ray of light in. But just because during this time of Golus, this time of exile, the beginnings of our months, and hence the dates of our Mo'adim being fixed beforehand, appear to be entirely dependent on an unalterable fixed calendar, now that it seems like it's fixed, growing up today, a Jew thinks, what makes our holidays? The calendar makes our holidays. There's no partnership between the Jewish people. It's the calendar. Check out. When's Pesach this year? When's Pesach in 13 years from now? When's it going to affect the bar mitzvah? What? It's a fixed thing. What role do we have in it? Nothing. Our festivals would be in danger of entirely losing the imprint of free choice in the fixation of the festivals, which should lie between God and His people. We would have lost that essential component. Did not the second day of Yontiv keep alive the recollection of the original Kiddush al Pi Re'iya? Had not the sages established 2 days? 2 days, everybody asks. Why? You know why? Because we have an idea that it once was done through testimony. And I would venture to back up with her. She doesn't need my backing at all. Had there been no concept of the two-day Yontif, in which people would ask, why are we doing this? It would be a lost footnote for the scholars that there once was a time that Rosh Chodesh was declared based on testimony. Because our calendar would be completely fixed. And there would be no remnant left of it. Says of Hirsch, when the sages established the calendar, they realized that they were paying a heavy price. We needed to do it because we would have had nothing. You know what the price was of establishing the calendar? The main point of this is to have the Jewish people involved. Is to have us declaring it ourselves. And now that's gone. How do we keep that? How do we maintain some element in the exile? 2 day Yom Tov. And the idea of the fixing of our festivals by the people. For these second days had their origin in those better times when we still had a national center. Because when did they start this 2 day Yom Tov? Oh yeah, when the Jews were home in the land of Israel and the high court still functioned. And we still had our national representatives for whose decision all outlying communities had to look and wait. And all the communities would be waiting, what'd they do in Yerushalayim, before they could fix the date of their festivals. And it was just in this looking and waiting that these communities recognized themselves as members and part of a great whole. When those communities, the outlying communities, 15 days travel away from Yerushalayim, would have to sit and wait and say to themselves, no, what'd they do in Yerushalayim? They felt like they were really part of the entirety of the Jewish people and could feel that their festivals were times arranged freely by themselves for the coming together of God and His people. Those communities where the messengers from the center could not reach in time and who were accordingly in doubt as to which day had been fixed kept both days. And the members of our last representative assembly indeed knew well what they were doing when at the time that they fixed the calendar for the whole of the future years of Golus, when they set it up for everyone, Sholchu Misom, they sent out to all those communities who hitherto had to keep the 2 days of Yontif, saying to them, His Haru b'minhag avoseichem b'yadeichem, keep meticulously the custom of your fathers in your hands. Zimnin de gozru hamalchus gzeira de osilu kokule, because maybe in the stress of times of oppression and persecution, the true knowledge of the Torah and also the way that we are now fixing the calendar may become lost, and you will then fix new moons and festivals according to dead reckoning or by actual sight of the moon. No longer know that it is not astronomical calculations nor the actual occurrence, but the consecrating fixation by the representatives of Israel that makes new moons and festivals of Jewish Mo'adim. That's the quote of what basically we said. Don't ever forget this.
Don't ever forget that really what's going on here is a meeting place between the Jewish people and between Hashem, in which Hashem begs us to have a part in it, to look at the new moon, to see in that the dusting off of what we've become, and to recalibrate ourselves. And therefore, it is therefore a profound truth that for Israel in Golus, it is only the second day of Yontiv that ensures the first day its sacred Jewish character. If not for the second day, then the first day would lose its character because it would become just a fixed calendar date. This is intrinsically when Yontiv is supposed to be. No, there's no such thing as intrinsically when it's supposed to be. It's when we declare together with Hashem when it's supposed to be. And that would have been lost had not we had the two-day Yontiv to remind ourselves of that. That is a brilliant approach to the concept of the two-day Yontiv. Really unique in my mind. Just really phenomenal. And it is. It's interesting, again, just today, particularly, where we're now almost half the world Jewish population is back in Israel, where they are only keeping one day, now it's becoming harder. It's always like, why are we still doing this? Why are we still doing this? But it makes sense, because it's kept us in the Golus, and now that we're halfway back to Israel, where it's beginning to, you know, the constant asking about it is where it is, as we begin our move back. But for those of us still in the exile, says Rav Hirsch, it's the concept of the second day, which infuses that first day with the sanctity that it was really supposed to have, which was lost when we had to establish the calendar. Really brilliant approach. Okay, but we got more to do. It is only after all this that the words HaChodesh Hazeh Lechem Rosh Chodeshim, that this month is to you, get their real meaning. This renewal of the moon shall be a beginning of renewals for you, i.e. noticing, realizing the fresh birth of the moon shall induce you to achieve a similar rejuvenation. You are to fix your moons, your periods of time, by taking note of this ever-fresh recurring rejuvenation. That's our job, to see that new moon translate into what we need for ourselves. It does not say HaChodesh Hazeh Rosh Chodeshim. It doesn't just say it's intrinsically the new moon, but Lachem, to you. It is not a question of the actual month, but of our month. And this is why we find the commentary as Chod Sheichem, Oadechem, your month, your holidays, whereas Shabbos is never called Shabbatchem, like your Shabbos, because Shabbos is Shabbos, but the holidays are yours. Okay, let's go to the next paragraph. So the Jewish consecration of the new moon is an institution for the periodical, fresh, spiritual, and moral rejuvenation of Israel by finding itself again in conjunction with its God. That's what it is that we're doing, and that's what Rosh Chodesh represents. The Jewish people freshly rejuvenating themselves spiritually and morally. Our sages put the whole idea in pithy brevity in their explanation when they said, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, Dugma, it's an example to you. Meaning this renewal of the moon gives you your model. What do you mean my model? Just like where there was darkness, now there is light. That is our model for ourselves as the darkness creeps in to brush it off and allow the light. And they give the meaning of Rosh Chodesh, which literally finds its expression in Korban Musaf. What is the meaning of Rosh Chodesh? As being concentrated in what they explain to be the goal that the Seir Rosh Chodesh attempts to attain. I'll translate in a moment. L'chaper al tumas mikdash u'kdoshav she'im ba'idiyah v'lo b'tchila v'lo b'sof. With the Korban Musaf, every holiday has a special Korban Musaf, the additional Korban, which is why we have the additional davening of Musaf. What was the Korban Musaf of Rosh Chodesh? It was an atonement offering. What did it atone for? What did the Jewish people bring on Rosh Chodesh? They atoned for one who entered into the sanctity, the mikdash, in a state of ritual impurity, in a state of tumah, whether he knew about it, in a situation which he did not know about it. So every month, they would bring a specific public offering, which would be an atonement for the people who had entered into the mikdash over the course of the previous month, when they really were not allowed to because they were tameh, they were ritually impure, but they didn't realize that. Fairly straightforward case. Someone had come back from a funeral. He didn't appropriately go to the mikvah or purify himself. He shakes your hand. You didn't realize he had just been to a funeral earlier. You have now become tameh, and you can't go into the Beis HaMikdash, assuming that he had actually come into contact with the deceased. You don't know about it. You didn't realize. You weren't allowed to go. It's pretty serious infraction going into the Beis HaMikdash when you're in a state in Tumah and you didn't realize it. Or you were in a room with a dead body and you didn't realize there had been a body in that same room, in a building. And you go in. So every month, there would be a public offering that would atone for all of the Jews who had gone into the Mikdash unknowingly in a state of Tumah, in a state of impurity. Says Rav Hirsch, you think that's just by choice, by chance, that that happens to be the atonement that's brought on Rosh Chodesh? He reads inside, starting from after that Hebrew line, what we're bringing is to work against all our estrangement from all holiness and holy ideas into which we have unconsciously drifted and which we ourselves would not notice. Isn't that beautiful? What does that atonement mean? You've drifted from a state of holiness and you don't realize it. You don't realize it. But you're no longer holy. You've come into contact with ritual impurity and are unaware. And now you try to enter into the place of holiness and you're not allowed to be here. And you've become distant from that. So we atone for that. Why on Rosh Chodesh? Says refers, what do you mean why on Rosh Chodesh? It's so beautiful. That's what we're doing on Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is the dusting off. The reminder of who we are and what we are. To recalibrate ourselves to what it is that we need to be. Without this regularly bringing ourselves back into communion with our God, without this chance to regularly dust ourselves off, without this regular monthly being radiated afresh by the light and warmth of His Spirit, we should always slide farther and farther from Him, always be getting more and more estranged from Him, quite unconsciously and without our noticing it. Our natures would become less and less responsive to the light of His Spirit. Our natures would become darker and darker until, like Paro, our hearts would become so chazak and kaved, so heavy and strong, that even the most startling osos, the most startling signs, and the most affecting mosim and wonders would not achieve the rebirth, the rejuvenation of our inner selves. You can get to a point where you get so dark and so covered with schmutz that when you see the light, it doesn't do anything for you anymore. You're too dark. How do you prevent that from happening? Every month you dust yourself off. If you dust every month, the dusting is easy. If you try dusting once a year, hard to clean out. But the Jewish idea of kapara, of atonement, comprises not only the spiritual and moral rebirth of our inner selves, that we do need to spiritually and morally rebirth our inner selves, but along with it, a fresh arrangement of our external, our social, and our national conditions as well. The rebirth of our inner selves must come first, and the other than results both lie in one hand, the hand of our God, and in our voluntary finding ourselves again with Him, both are assured. So now, once you take care of that, you take care of the inner self, so then the other things will happen and flow off of that. Okay, so far so good? It's beautiful writing. Just beautiful.
A lot of the women meet on
Rosh Chodesh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Rosh Chodesh has become as a time for women particularly to... Yes.
We're elevated and we're supposed to do, things for ourselves. That's something
dangerous. Yep. Okay, two more paragraphs. So Chodesh proclaims salvation from sin and evil. So this new moon, the new month, is going to proclaim a salvation from that which we've done wrong, from our own sin and our own evil. And that is why this institution stands at the commencement of the building up of our nation. Why is this the first mitzvah given? The first thing that's said to the Jewish people still in Egypt? HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. This you have a new month. If you remember last week when I introduced this chapter 12, where is chapter 12 said? In between plagues 9 and 10. Still in Egypt, not yet free. Says Rav Hirsch, of course. This institution, the institution that says, you will get sullied, you will become filled with dust, but I'm going to give you something to say, every month, dust yourself off. Don't let it get where it's caked on and crusted. That's the first thing that the Jewish people are taught. The truth which it teaches forms the foundation stone of our Jewishness.
and it is this which differentiates it most sharply from all paganism. The heathen knows no chiddush. He knows nothing new. Not in the world, not in humanity, not in his gods, not in the powers he places above men in the world. To him, everything is bound by cast iron necessity. To him, all todays are evolved from yesterdays, and every tomorrow must with absolute certainty follow from today. And just as he denies the yesh me'ayin, the something from nothing, the free creation by the free will of a creator, for him there is no yesh me'ayin in the moral nature of a man. No something from nothing when it comes to the moral nature of man. That man can make himself new. He's not bound by following a path that he had started before. No yesh me'ayin in the fate of man. Guilt and evil must forever and ever beget only guilt and evil. For the heathen, for the pagan, everything is cast iron. It has to be this way. What it began, it will continue. For him, nothing of godlike freedom dwells in the human breast. For him, no free God reigns in and over the world. Everything swims down the stream of blind, unalterable necessity. All freedom is but an illusion. Everything new is only that which existed in the old. Pretty poetic paragraph. Everything follows. It's cast iron. It has to follow. Today will follow yesterday, and tomorrow will follow today. Evil will beget evil, and everything swims down the stream of blind, unalterable necessity. The concept of new, of freedom, of choice, of a change from the past is beyond the heathen pagan. And therefore, it's in Eretz Mitzrayim. It's still in the land of Egypt, in the land of the most consistent paganism, in the land in which this pagan immutability extended even into the state system of social life and created the chains of caste. If you were born a slave, you'll die a slave, and nothing will ever change. In that society, in Egypt, God called the future leader of his people out into the open. Moshe showed him the narrow crescent of the moon struggling out of complete darkness into new light and said, "This is to be your model. You who have been a slave, your people will not be a slave. You will break free from that which was and create something new." Chadash and Chodesh, the newness of the moon, the newness of life. Let that be a model that which was dark and covered can again burst forth with light. Just as it, bound by physical laws, rejuvenates itself, so are you by your own free will to create your own rejuvenations. Whenever it occurs, it is to remind you of your own possibilities of rejuvenation. And inasmuch as I rejuvenate you, and you rejuvenate yourselves, you are moonlike to pass across the night sky of the nations and proclaim everywhere the teaching of Chiddush. You, the Jewish people, will then teach the world this lesson. Newness. Freedom, ability to change, to morally rejuvenate. This teaching that God has given man the possibility of always being able to start afresh, that his whole moral and physical fate is entirely in his own hands. This chiddush, this newness, is moreover nothing else than the direct corollary of the four-letter name of Hashem, the name of God who has the complete mastery to arrange every coming moment of the future, by which name the Jew silently within himself worships his God. That, says Rav Hirsch, is why A, Rosh Chodesh is the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people. B, why it's always called Lachem, it's to you, it's yours. You are going to join with me in this endeavor. I give it to you to determine when it will be. By your mouth it goes, because it symbolizes the idea of the Jew seeing in the darkness of the moon, which had gotten darker and darker and darker and darker and then disappeared, so light can reshine again. It's a model to you how to live your life. Always dust off, recalibrate. What is it that you need to be doing? And explains Rav Hirsch, when we lost that ability to proclaim the new moon based on witnesses, and the Jewish people were exiled, and 95% of the Jews lived in the exile, the very sages who gave us the calendar, who established that there's no longer a need for this message, because we couldn't deal with it,
said, but I'm going to put it back in there that you always remember it. And every single holiday, you will have 2 days to remind yourself of the time. Why do we have 2 days? There was once a time where this is how it worked. So that we'll be reminded of the lesson that we need to take, of the rejuvenation, of the being refreshed. And therefore we will keep the 2 days today. All right. That is something, huh?
And this was given when they were in Egypt?
Yeah,
still in
Egypt, in between the 9th and 10th plagues.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.